ways that would give them more power and more say in their lives. 1. Sarah needs to make a rule that whenever her son throws a tantrum to get his way, he will not get what he wants, ever, period. No exceptions. By giving in to his tantrums, Sarah has taught her son to throw them, which not only hurts his relationship with his mother, but will also teach him to be demanding with others and will hurt his ability to relate socially to others. If Sarah can be firm, kind, and consistent, she'll notice remarkable changes in a short time. 2. By giving in to the bully, Billy taught Ryan that his intimidating behavior was okay. Standing up to him early, even if it meant getting beaten up, would have been better than spending a whole year in anguish. Almost all bullies pick on people who won't fight back. They use intimidation and are rarely interested in real conflict. 3. Kelly made a strategic mistake by avoiding conflict early in her relationship with Carl. By giving in to his demands early on, she taught him that it was okay for him to control her. Standing up to him after years of giving in is very difficult, but essential to saving the relationship. I see many, many people who, even after years of giving in, learn to stand up for themselves and change their relationship. Sometimes it takes a separation to convince the other person of your resolve, but the consequences of being controlled in a marriage are often depression and a lack of sexual desire. Standing up for oneself in a firm yet kind way is often marriage-saving. 4. Bruce gave up his power when he allowed Chet to belittle him in front of others. No job is worth being tormented by your boss. Yet most people find that if they respectfully stand up to their boss, he or she is less likely to walk over them in the future. If, after standing up for yourself in a reasonable way, the boss continues to belittle you, it's time to look for a new job. Being in a job you hate will take years off your life. Assertiveness means expressing your feelings in a firm yet reasonable way. Assertiveness does not mean becoming mean or aggressive. Here are 5 rules to help you assert yourself in a healthy manner. 1. Don't give in to the anger of others just because it makes you uncomfortable. 2. Don't allow the opinions of others to control how you feel about yourself. Your opinion within reason needs to be the one that counts. 3. Say what you mean and stick up for what you believe is right. 4. Maintain self-control. 5. Be kind if possible, but above all, be firm in your stance. Remember that we teach others how to treat us. When we give in to their temper tantrums, we teach them that that is how to control us. When we assert ourselves in a firm yet kind way, others have more respect for us and treat us accordingly. If you have allowed others to run over you emotionally for a long time, they'll be a little resistant to your newfound assertiveness. But stick to it, and you'll help them learn a new way of relating. You'll also help cool down your basal ganglia. Spiritual basal ganglia prescriptions. Spiritual. Purpose and passion. Having a deep sense of passion and purpose can lead to a sense of calm. Feeling aimless or purposeless has been associated with free-floating anxiety. When you're feeling anxious, focus on meaningful and goal-directed activities. Not only will the activities distract you from your angst, they will connect you with a higher sense of purpose which can also help you feel better. The worst thing you can do is anxiously sit around obsessing about how bad you feel. Spiritual. Consider going to spiritual services. A strong correlation exists between people who attend religious services and personal happiness, according to a recent study by the Austin Institute for the Study of Family and Culture. The study found that people who attend services on a weekly basis are nearly twice as likely to describe themselves as very happy, 45%, than people who never attend, 28%. Conversely, those who never worship are twice as likely to say they are very unhappy, 4%, compared to those who attend services weekly, 2%. Research has suggested that deep spiritual beliefs may offer significance and meaning to life. Many different religions teach coping mechanisms that can improve physical and emotional health. My work with the Daniel Plan, the program at Saddleback Church I referenced in the introduction, is a large-scale example. Faith can be a powerful motivating force, plus parishioners often receive emotional support from others. Spiritual. Consider whether the anxiety is from another generation. In fascinating but disturbing new research, fear has been shown to be passed down through generations. Perhaps you're afraid of something and have absolutely no idea why. The researchers Brian Diaz and Carrie Ressler from Emory University made mice afraid of a cherry blossom scent by shocking them whenever the smell was in the air. This is called classical fear conditioning. Even more startling, the researchers also found that the children and grandchildren of the mice were also afraid of the scent of cherry blossoms, even though they were never exposed to the shocks. The fear was actually transmitted generationally through a concept called epigenetics. The implications of this finding are wide-reaching. Emotions like fear, anxiety, and maybe even hatred may have ancestral origins. If you are afraid of something and have no idea why, go back through your genealogy and look for any clues that might explain the fear, which may actually have nothing to do with your experience. Prior generation stress has been associated with depression, antisocial behaviors, and memory impairment. Fortunately, it seems that stress in your ancestors can go both ways. Another study published in the journal Nature Communications suggested prior generation stress can help animals learn to better cope with stress. Chapter 10. Looking into inattention and impulsivity, the prefrontal cortex. Functions of the prefrontal cortex, PFC. Focus, forethought, judgment, impulse control, organization, planning, problem solving, learning from experience, ability to feel and express emotions, empathy. The prefrontal cortex, PFC, is the most evolved part of the brain. It occupies the front third of the brain, behind the forehead. It is often divided into three sections. The dorsal lateral section, on the outside surface of the PFC, the inferior orbital section, on the front undersurface of the brain, and the anterior cingulate gyrus, which runs through the middle of the frontal lobes. The anterior cingulate gyrus, usually considered to be part of the limbic system, will be covered in its own chapter. The dorsal lateral and inferior orbital gyrus are often termed the executive control center of the brain and will be discussed together in this chapter. When necessary, I'll distinguish what is known about their functions. Overall, the PFC is the part of the brain that watches, supervises, guides, directs, and focuses your behavior. It supervises executive functions, governing abilities such as time management, judgment, impulse control, planning, organization, and critical thinking. Our ability as a species to think, plan ahead, use time wisely, and communicate with others is heavily influenced by this part of the brain. The PFC is responsible for behaviors that are necessary for you to be goal-directed, socially responsible, and effective. The North Carolina neuropsychiatrist C. Thomas Gualtieri succinctly summarized the human functions of the prefrontal cortex as the capacity to formulate goals, to make plans for their execution, to carry them out in an effective way, and to change course and improvise in the face of obstacles or failure, and to do so successfully in the absence of external direction or structure. The capacity of the individual to generate goals and achieve them is considered to be an essential aspect of a mature and effective personality. It is not a social convention or an artifact of culture. It is hardwired in the construction of the prefrontal cortex and its connections. The PFC, especially the inferior orbital PFC, helps you think about what you say or do before you say or do it. For example, if you are having a disagreement with your spouse and you have good PFC function, you are more likely to give a thoughtful response that helps the situation. If you have poor PFC function, you are more likely to do or say something that makes the situation worse. The PFC helps you problem solve, see ahead of a situation, and through experience, choose among the most helpful alternatives. Playing a game such as chess effectively requires good PFC function. This is also the part of the brain that helps you learn from mistakes. Good PFC function doesn't mean that you won't make mistakes. Rather, it generally means that you won't make the same mistake over and over. You are able to learn from the past and apply its lessons. For example, a student with good PFC function is likely to learn that if he or she starts a long-term project early, there is more time for research and less anxiety over getting it done. A student with decreased PFC function doesn't learn from past frustrations and may tend to put everything off until the last minute. Poor PFC function tends to appear in people who have trouble learning from experience. They tend to make repetitive mistakes. Their actions are based not on experience, but rather on the moment and on their immediate wants and needs. The PFC, especially the dorsal lateral PFC, is also involved with sustaining attention span. It helps you focus on important information while filtering out less significant thoughts and sensations. Attention span is required for short-term memory and learning. The PFC, through its many connections within the brain, helps you stay on task and allows you to follow through on a project until it is finished. The PFC actually sends quieting signals to the limbic and sensory parts of the brain when you need to focus and decreases the distracting input from other brain areas. When the PFC is underactive, you become more distractible. This will be discussed in detail under attention deficit disorder. The PFC, especially the dorsal lateral PFC, is also the part of the brain that allows you to feel and express emotions, to feel happiness, sadness, joy, and love. It is different from the more primitive limbic system. Even though the limbic system controls mood and libido, the PFC is able to translate the workings of the limbic system into recognizable feelings, emotions, and words, such as love, passion, or hate. Underactivity or damage in this part of the brain often leads to a decreased ability to express thoughts and feelings. Thoughtfulness and impulse control are heavily influenced by the PFC. The ability to think through the consequences of behavior, choosing a good mate, interacting with customers, dealing with difficult children, spending money, driving on the freeway, is essential for effective living in nearly every aspect of life. Without proper PFC function, it is difficult to act in consistent, thoughtful ways, and impulses can take over. The PFC has many connections to the limbic system. It sends inhibitory messages that help keep it under control. It helps you use your head along with your emotions. When there is damage or underactivity in this part of the brain, especially on the left side, the PFC cannot appropriately inhibit the limbic system, causing an increased vulnerability to depression if the limbic system becomes overactive. A classic example of this problem occurs in people who have had left frontal lobe strokes. 60% of patients with these strokes develop major depression within a year. When scientists scan the prefrontal cortex with neuroimaging studies like SPECT, they often do two studies, one in a resting state and a second during a concentration task. In evaluating brain function, it is important to look at a working brain. When a normal brain is challenged by a concentration task, such as math problems or sorting cards, the PFC activity increases. In certain brain conditions, such as attention deficit disorder and schizophrenia, prefrontal cortex activity decreases in response to an intellectual challenge. Problems in the prefrontal cortex. Short attention span, distractibility, lack of perseverance, reduced impulse control, hyperactivity, chronic lateness, poor time management, disorganization, procrastination, unavailability of emotions, misperceptions, poor judgment, trouble learning from experience, short-term memory problems, social and test-taking anxiety. Problems in the dorsal lateral prefrontal cortex often lead to decreased attention span, distractibility, impaired short-term memory, decreased mental speed, apathy, and decreased verbal expression. Problems in the inferior orbital cortex often lead to poor impulse control, mood control problems due to its connections with the limbic system, decreased social skills, and decreased control over behavior. People with PFC problems often do things they later regret. Test anxiety and social anxiety may be hallmarks of problems in the PFC. Tests require concentration and the retrieval of information. Many people with PFC problems experience difficulties in test situations because they have trouble activating this part of the brain under stress, even if they have adequately prepared for the test. In a similar way, social situations require concentration, impulse control, and dealing with uncertainty. PFC deactivation often causes a person's mind to go blank in conversation, which naturally causes discomfort in social situations. When men have problems in this part of the brain, their emotions are often unavailable to them, and their partners complain that they do not share their feelings. This can cause serious problems in a relationship. Many women, for example, blame their male partners for being cold or unfeeling when it is really a problem in the PFC that causes a lack of being tuned in to the feelings of the moment. Attention Deficit Disorder, ADD. ADD, also called ADHD, Attention Deficit Hyperactivity Disorder, typically occurs as a result of neurological dysfunction in the prefrontal cortex. As I've mentioned, when people with ADD try to concentrate, PFC activity decreases rather than increases as it does in the normal brains of control group subjects. As such, people with ADD show many of the symptoms discussed in this chapter, such as poor internal supervision, short attention span, distractibility, disorganization, hyperactivity, although only about half the people with ADD are hyperactive, impulse control problems, difficulty learning from past errors, lack of forethought, and procrastination. ADD used to be thought of as a disorder of hyperactive boys who would outgrow it before puberty. We now know that most people with ADD do not outgrow the symptoms of this disorder and that it frequently occurs in girls and women, 20% of those diagnosed with ADD. It is estimated that ADD affects 17 million Americans. ADD has been a particular interest of mine over the past 30 years. Of note, 3 of my 4 children have this disorder. I tell people I know more about ADD than I want to. Through the SPECT research done in our clinics, along with the brain imaging and genetic work done by others, we have found that ADD is basically a genetically inherited disorder of the PFC due in part to a deficiency of the neurotransmitter dopamine. ADD is not one simple disorder, but rather has 7 different types. You can read a more in-depth discussion in my book, Healing ADD, the breakthrough program that allows you to see and heal the 7 types of ADD, and in Chapter 16. Here are some of the common characteristics of ADD that clearly connect this disorder to the PFC. The harder you try, the worse it gets. Research has shown that the more people with ADD try to concentrate, the worse things get for them. Instead of increasing as it should, the activity in the PFC will actually decrease. This means that when a parent, teacher, supervisor, or manager puts more pressure on a person with ADD to perform, he or she often becomes less effective. Too frequently, when this happens, the parent, teacher, or boss interprets this decreased performance as willful misconduct, and serious problems arise. One man with ADD whom I treat told me that whenever his boss puts intense pressure on him to do a better job, his performance becomes much worse, even though he really tries to do better. While it is true that almost all of us perform better with praise, I've found that it is essential for people with ADD. When the boss encourages him to do better in a positive way, he becomes more productive. In parenting, teaching, supervising, or managing someone with ADD, it is much more effective to use praise and encouragement rather than pressure. People with ADD do best in environments that are highly interesting or stimulating, and relatively relaxed. Short attention span. A short attention span is the hallmark of this disorder. People with ADD have trouble sustaining attention and effort over prolonged periods of time. Their attention tends to wander, and they are frequently off task, thinking about or doing things other than the task at hand. Yet one of the things that often fools inexperienced clinicians assessing this disorder is that people with ADD do not have a short attention span for everything. Often, people with ADD can pay attention just fine to things that are new, novel, highly stimulating, interesting, or frightening. These things provide enough intrinsic stimulation that they activate the PFC so the person can focus and concentrate. A child with ADD might do very well in a one-on-one situation and completely fall apart in a classroom of 30 children. My son with ADD, for example, used to take 4 hours to do a half hour's worth of homework, frequently getting off task. Yet, if you gave him a car stereo magazine, he would quickly read it from cover to cover and remember every little detail in it. People with ADD have long-standing problems paying attention to regular, routine, everyday matters such as homework, schoolwork, chores, or paperwork. The mundane is terrible for them, and it is not a choice. They need excitement and interest to kick in their PFC function. Many adult couples tell me that in the beginning of their relationship, the partner with adult ADD could pay attention to the other person for hours. The stimulation of new love helped him or her focus. But as the newness and excitement of the relationship began to fade, as it does in nearly all relationships, the person with ADD had a much harder time paying attention, and his or her ability to listen faltered. Distractibility. As mentioned earlier, the PFC sends inhibitory signals to other areas of the brain, quieting stimulation from the environment so that you can concentrate. When the PFC is underactive, it doesn't adequately dampen the sensory parts of the brain, and too many stimuli bombard the brain as a result. Distractibility is evident in many different settings for the person with ADD. In class, during meetings, or while listening to a partner, the person with ADD tends to notice other things going on and has trouble staying focused on the issue at hand. People with ADD tend to look around the room, drift off, appear bored, forget where the conversation is going, and interrupt with extraneous information. Their distractibility and short attention span may also cause them to take much longer to complete their work. Impulsivity. Lack of impulse control gets many ADD people into hot water. They may say inappropriate things to parents, friends, teachers, supervisors, colleagues, or customers. I once had a patient who had been fired from 13 jobs because he had trouble controlling what he said. He would just blurt out what he was thinking before he had a chance to process the thought. Poorly thought out decisions also relate to impulsivity. Rather than thinking a problem through, many ADD people want an immediate solution and act without the necessary forethought. In a similar vein, impulsivity causes these people to have trouble going through the established channels at work. They often go right to the top to solve problems rather than working through the system. This may cause resentment from coworkers and immediate supervisors. Impulsivity may also lead to such problem behaviors as lying, saying the first thing that comes into your mind, stealing, having affairs, and excessive spending. I have treated many ADD people who have suffered with the shame and guilt of these behaviors. In my lectures, I often ask the audience, how many people here are married? A large percentage of the audience raises their hands. I then ask, is it helpful for you to say everything you think in your marriage? The audience laughs because they know the answer. Of course not. I continue, relationships require tact. Yet because of impulsivity and lack of forethought, many people with ADD say the first thing that comes to mind. And instead of apologizing for saying something hurtful, many ADD people will justify why they said the hurtful remark, only making the situation worse. An impulsive comment can ruin a nice evening, a weekend, even a whole marriage. Conflict seeking. Many people with ADD unconsciously seek conflict as a way to stimulate their own prefrontal cortex. They do not know they are doing it. They do not plan to do it. They deny that they do it, and yet they do it just the same. The relative lack of activity and stimulation to the PFC craves more activity. Hyperactivity, restlessness, and humming are common forms of self-stimulation. Another way I have seen people with ADD try to turn on their brains is by causing turmoil. If they can get their parents or spouses to be emotionally intense or yell at them, that might increase activity in their frontal lobes and help them feel more tuned in. Again, this is not a conscious phenomenon, but it seems that many ADD people become addicted to turmoil. I once treated a man who would quietly stand behind a corner in his house and jump out and scare his wife when she walked by. He liked the charge he got out of her screams. Unfortunately for the wife, she developed an irregular heart rhythm because of the repetitive scares. I have also treated many adults and children with ADD who seem driven to get their pets upset by playing roughly or teasing them. The parents of children with ADD commonly report that the kids are experts at upsetting them. One mother told me that when she wakes up in the morning, she promises herself that she won't yell at or get upset with her 8-year-old son. Yet invariably, by the time he is off to school, there have been at least 3 fights, and both of them feel terrible. When I explain the child's unconscious need for stimulation to the mother, she stopped yelling at him. When parents stop providing the negative stimulation, yelling, spanking, lecturing, etc., these children decrease the negative behaviors. Whenever you feel like screaming at one of these kids, stop yourself and instead talk as softly as you can. At least in that way, you're helping to break their addiction to turmoil and lowering your own blood pressure. Another self-stimulating behavior common in people with ADD is worrying or focusing on problems. The emotional turmoil generated by worrying or being upset produces stress chemicals that keep the brain active. I once treated a woman that had depression and ADD. She started each session by telling me she was going to kill herself. She recognized that this would make me anxious, and she seemed to enjoy telling me the gruesome details of how she would do it. After about a year of listening to her, I finally figured out that she wasn't really going to kill herself. She was using my reaction as a source of stimulation for her. After getting to know her well, I told her, "Stop talking about suicide. I do not believe you'll kill yourself. You love your 4 children, and I can't believe you would ever abandon them. I think you use this talk as a way to keep things stirred up. Without knowing, your ADD causes you to play the game of let's have a problem. This ruins any joy you could have in your life." Initially, she was very upset with me. Another source of conflict, I told her. But she trusted me enough to at least look at the behavior. Decreasing her need for turmoil became the major focus of psychotherapy. A significant problem with using anger, emotional turmoil, and negative emotion for self-stimulation is damage to the immune system. The high levels of adrenaline produced by conflict-driven behavior decrease the immune system's effectiveness and increase vulnerability to illness. I have seen evidence of this over and over with the connection between ADD and chronic infections and in the increased incidence of fibromyalgia, chronic muscle pain thought to be associated with immune deficiency. As noted, many folks with ADD tend to be in constant turmoil with one or more people at home, work, or school. They seem to unconsciously choose people who are vulnerable and pick verbal battles with them. Many mothers of children with ADD have told me that they feel like running away from home. They cannot stand the constant turmoil in their relationship with the child with ADD. Many children and adults with ADD have a tendency to embarrass others for little or no good reason, which consequently distances their victims from them and can result in social isolation. They may be the class clowns in school or the wisecrackers at work. Witzelsucht is a term in the neuropsychiatric literature that characterizes an addiction to making bad jokes. It was first described in patients who had frontal lobe brain tumors, especially on the right side. Disorganization. Disorganization is another hallmark of ADD. It includes disorganization of physical space, such as rooms, desks, book bags, filing cabinets, and closets, as well as disorganization of time. Often when you look at work areas of people with ADD, it is a wonder they can work there at all. They tend to have many piles of stuff. Paperwork is often hard for them to keep straight, and they seem to have a filing system that only they can figure out, and then only on good days. Many people with ADD are chronically late or put things off until the last possible moment. I've had several patients who have bought sirens from alarm companies to help them wake up. Imagine what the neighbors thought. They also tend to lose track of time, which contributes to lateness. Start many projects, but finish few. The energy and enthusiasm of people with ADD often push them to start many projects. Unfortunately, their distractibility and short attention span impair their ability to complete them. One radio station manager told me that he had started over 30 special projects the year before, but completed only a handful. He told me, "I'm always going to get back to them, but I get new ideas that get in the way." I also treat a college professor who told me that the year before he saw me, he had started 300 different projects. His wife finished the thought by telling me he had completed only three. Moodiness and negative thinking. Many people with ADD tend to be moody, irritable, and negative. Since the PFC is underactive, it cannot fully temper the limbic system, which becomes overactive, leading to mood control issues. In another subtle way, as mentioned, many people with ADD worry or become over-focused on negative thoughts as a form of self-stimulation. If they cannot seek turmoil from others in the environment, they seek it within themselves. They often have a sky-is-falling attitude that distances them from others. Kent. Kent was 24 years old when he first came to see me. He came for help because he had gone to junior college for six straight semesters, but hadn't been able to finish a single class. He wanted to go to medical school. Everybody told him he was nuts. How could he go to medical school if he couldn't even finish a junior college semester? Then, his mother read my book, Healing ADD. She wondered if Kent didn't have attention deficit disorder. After I took Kent's history, It was clear he had suffered from an undiagnosed lifelong case of ADD. From the time he had been in kindergarten, he had had problems staying in his seat. He had been restless, distractible, disorganized, and labeled as an underachiever. Kent's father requested that we do a SPECT study to look at his brain. He wanted to make sure Kent wasn't just looking for another excuse as to why he was failing in life. Kent's SPECT study at rest was normal. When Kent tried to concentrate, however, the prefrontal cortex of his brain turned off. After the results of the clinical examination and SPECT studies, we created Kent's four circles interventions. Biological, Adderall, a stimulant medication that is used to treat symptoms of ADD. Physical exercise, a higher protein, lower carbohydrate diet, omega-3 fatty acids with a higher EPA ratio. Psychological, meditation to help with focus. Social, school accommodations to help with test-taking and organization. Spiritual, encourage Kent to take classes in subjects for which he had a passion. Kent completed all of his classes at school the next semester. In 18 months, he got his associate's degree, and 3 years later, he finished his bachelor's degree in biology and was accepted to medical school. It's amazing how much his father's attitude toward him changed. Kent's dad told me, "I thought he was just lazy." It makes me sad to think that all those years he had a medical problem, and I just hassled him for being lazy. I wish I could have those years back. When the brain is underactive, it's uncomfortable. Unconsciously, people learn how to turn it on by conflict, coffee or cigarettes, both mild stimulants, anger, highly stimulating physical activities, such as bungee jumping, bungee jumpers need to be screened for ADD, or by living a fast-paced life. There's one man in my practice who has 10 businesses because that's what he needs in order to keep himself stimulated. Psychotic disorders. Psychotic disorders such as schizophrenia affect a person's ability to distinguish reality from fantasy. These disorders are complex and involve several brain areas, but at least in part, the neurotransmitter abnormalities cause decreased prefrontal cortex activity. Schizophrenia is a chronic, long-standing disorder characterized by delusions, hallucinations, and distorted thinking. When I first started ordering SPECT studies on schizophrenic patients, I began to understand why they distorted incoming information. The following cases are good examples. Julie. Julie was 48 years old when we met. She had a history of hospitalizations for paranoid thinking, hearing voices, and delusional thinking. Her main delusion centered around being assaulted by someone who had put an electrical probe inside her head that blasted her with electricity. She had been on multiple medication trials without success. Because of her lack of responsiveness to standard treatments, I ordered a brain SPECT study. In a sense, Julie was right. She was being blasted with electricity. She had multiple focal areas of increased activity in her brain, but because she had such poor prefrontal cortex activity, she was unable to process the physiological nature of her illness and develop delusions to explain the pain she experienced. Based on the information from the SPECT study, Julie was placed on a high therapeutic dose of Depakote, an anti-seizure medication, which lessened her pain and anxiety. For the first time, she was willing to entertain the possibility that her symptoms were the result of abnormal brain activity rather than an outside attack. A repeat SPECT study 8 months later showed a marked decrease in the hotspots in her brain, along with subsequent increased activity in her prefrontal cortex. Derek, a 13-year-old boy, was brought to see me because he was severely anxious. He was displaying psychotic symptoms, feeling that other children were talking about him behind his back and that they were out to embarrass him in front of the whole school. He started to avoid all contact with his peer group. If he saw people he knew at the mall, he would hide in the middle of clothes racks for fear that they might laugh at him or talk about him to others. He was petrified by his thoughts and stopped going to school. He even seriously entertained the idea of suicide. He had crying spells, sleeplessness, and intense anxiety. He wasn't able to rationally discuss any of these feelings. I saw him for months in psychotherapy and tried him on several antidepressant and antipsychotic medications without success. Once he was weaned off all medication, we did a SPECT scan to help us understand what was going on. Derek's SPECT study showed marked decreased activity in his prefrontal cortex at rest, a common finding in psychotic disorders. It is also a finding in some psychotic depressions. The study led me to try the stimulating antidepressant bupropion, Wellbutrin, although I feared it could make him worse based on his clinical symptoms. However, within 2 months, there was a dramatic clinical improvement in his condition. His mood was better, he had no suicidal thoughts, he was less sensitive to others, and he was more able to entertain alternatives to his distorted thoughts. 7 months later, he was much more like a normal teenager. A second SPECT study performed 6 months later showed normalization of his prefrontal cortex activity. 6 years later, I still see Derek every 6 months. He is an honors student at a highly prestigious university. The SPECT study was very important in the treatment process. It clearly showed Derek's parents that his problems were based on brain abnormalities and that he couldn't help what he thought or felt. They were able to respond in a more understanding and helpful manner, lowering the level of stress at home. Head injuries. Due to its location, the PFC is especially susceptible to head injury. Research suggests the PFC is involved in 91% of brain injuries. Many people do not fully understand how head injuries, sometimes even minor ones, in which no loss of consciousness occurs, can alter a person's character and ability to learn. This is particularly true when the head injury occurs in the brain's executive director, the PFC. Unfortunately for the PFC, the inferior orbital cortex sits on top of several sharp bony ridges inside the skull, and the dorsal lateral prefrontal cortex lies just underneath the place where many blows to the head occur. It is important to note that many people forget they've had a significant head injury in their lifetime. At Amon Clinics, we ask patients several times whether or not they had a significant head injury. Our intake paperwork asks the question, "Have you ever had a head injury?" The historian who gathers patients' histories before they see the physician asks them again about head injuries. The computer testing we have patients complete asks a third time. If I see no, no, and no to the question of head injuries, I'll ask again. If I get a fourth no, I will then say, "Are you sure? Have you ever fallen out of a tree, fallen off a fence, or dove into a shallow pool?" I am constantly amazed at how many people remember head injuries that they'd long forgotten or felt were too insignificant to remember. When asked the question for the fifth time, one patient put his hand on his forehead and said, "Oh yeah, when I was 5 years old, I fell out of a second-story window." Similarly, I have had other patients forget that they went through windshields, fell out of moving vehicles, or were knocked unconscious when they fell off their bicycles. Phineas Gage provided scientists with an extreme example of PFC dysfunction secondary to a head injury. This was one of the first cases in the medical literature about the outcome of prefrontal cortex damage. In 1848, at the age of 25, Gage was an up-and-coming railroad construction foreman in Vermont, working for the Rutland and Burlington Railroad. His job involved using a long tamping iron to ignite explosives to forge a path for the railroad. One day, a horrible accident occurred. The explosion sent the tamping iron, which was 1.25 inches in diameter, 3.5 feet long, and weighed 13.5 pounds, through the front part of Gage's skull. It went through his left eye, through the left prefrontal cortex, and out the top front part of his skull, leaving a circular 3.5 inch opening, destroying his left prefrontal cortex and surrounding areas of the brain. Initially, the interest in the case was due to Gage's survival, which was called unprecedented in surgical history. Years later, in 1868, his physician turned his attention to the personality changes in Gage. Before the accident, Gage had been an honest, reliable, deliberate person and a good worker. After the accident, even though he did not appear to suffer any intellectual impairment, he was described as childish, capricious, and obstinate, showed poor judgment, used profane language, and was inconsiderate of others. In short, his physician concluded that Gage was no longer Gage. In many ways, the PFC contains our ability to be ourselves. Zachary. Zachary is a modern-day example similar to that of Gage. At age 6, Zachary was a fun-loving, active boy who was affectionate, sweet, and eager to please. He did well in kindergarten and was liked by other children. One summer, between kindergarten and first grade, Zachary was riding in the front seat of a car with his mother on a trip to his grandparents' house. All of a sudden, a drunk driver swerved into their lane, causing Zachary's mother to quickly jerk the car to the side of the road. She lost control, and the car hit a tree. Zachary's mother's leg was broken in the accident, and Zachary, thankfully restrained by the seatbelt, hit his head against the side window. He was unconscious for about 10 minutes and was diagnosed with a mild traumatic brain injury. About 6 weeks later, Zachary began to change. He exhibited aggressive behavior, breaking his own toys and hurting his younger brother. He began swearing, blurted out statements at inappropriate times, and interrupted frequently. He became rude, contrary, argumentative, and conflict-seeking. He lost his friends at school the next year because he said things that hurt their feelings. He started to tease the two cats at home, so much so that they started to avoid him whenever he came into the house. 6 months after the accident, his mother knew something was seriously wrong. She took him to a counselor who thought the problem was psychological, a result of the accident. The counselor thought that Zachary and his mother were too close and developed strategies to help Zachary become more independent. That only seemed to make things worse. After 2 years of counseling, which didn't seem to help much, the mother consulted Zachary's pediatrician. He diagnosed Zachary with ADD and put him on Ritalin, but that didn't help very much either. In fact, it only seemed to make him more aggressive. Zachary was age 9 when he was brought to see me, and I thought he might have chronic post-concussive syndrome secondary to the accident. His brain SPECT study revealed marked decreased activity in the left PFC and decreased activity in the left occipital cortex, indicating both a front and back injury common in head injuries. In addition, there was decreased activity in his left temporal lobe. Given the history and scan findings, Zachary's four circles plan was as follows. Biological. I put Zachary on a combination of medication and anticonvulsant to stabilize his aggressiveness and help his temporal lobe function, and amantadine, Simitril, to help with focus, concentration, and impulse control, cognitive retraining exercises, a higher protein, lower carbohydrate diet, and omega-3 fatty acids, especially with a higher EPA ratio. Psychological. I taught him to ask himself, then what, before he did or said anything, which was a critical exercise. Social. Zachary was placed in a special class at school with appropriate accommodations. Spiritual. His mother started a local traumatic brain injury support group to help others. Over the next several months, Zachary's behavior significantly improved. Understanding the functions and problems of this part of the brain is often essential to the healing process of people who suffer. Prefrontal cortex checklist. Here is the prefrontal cortex checklist. Please listen to the list of behaviors and rate yourself or the person you are evaluating on each behavior listed. Use the following scale and place the appropriate number next to the item. 5 or more symptoms marked 3 or 4 indicate a high likelihood of prefrontal cortex problems. 0 equals never, 1 equals rarely, 2 equals occasionally, 3 equals frequently, 4 equals very frequently. 1. Inability to give close attention to details or avoid careless mistakes. 2. Trouble sustaining attention in routine situations. Homework, chores, paperwork. 3. Trouble listening. 4. Inability to finish things or follow through. 5. Poor organization of time or space. 6. Distractibility. 7. Poor planning skills. 8. Difficulty expressing feelings and emotions. 9. Difficulty expressing empathy for others. 10. Excessive daydreaming. 11. Boredom. 12. Conflict seeking. 13. Difficulty awaiting turn. 14. Impulsivity. Saying or doing things without thinking first. 15. Frequent traffic violations. Chapter 11. Achieving total focus. Prefrontal cortex prescriptions. The prefrontal cortex is the most evolved part of the brain. As such, it is essential in helping you reach your goals. To review, the prefrontal cortex is involved with concentration, attention span, judgment, impulse control, and critical thinking. It controls your ability to look at situations, organize your thoughts, plan what you want to do, and carry out your plans. The following four circles, PFC prescriptions, will help you optimize this part of your brain. Biological, supplements and medications, neurofeedback training, nutritional interventions, Mozart for focus and exercise. Psychological, one-page miracle exercise, then-what exercise, meditation. Social, focusing on the positive, getting organized, learning to ask for help, learning how to not be conflict-seeking or another person's stimulant. Spiritual, finding meaning, purpose, excitement, and stimulation in your life. Biological PFC prescriptions. Biological. Consider PFC supplements or medications from the Amen Clinics method algorithm. At Amen Clinics, we use the following algorithm when we see low PFC activity plus symptom clusters of ADD, depression, or psychosis. Supplements for low PFC plus ADD symptoms. Consider fish oil, zinc, green tea, rhodiola, ginseng, and ashwagandha. There is growing scientific literature that supports the use of EPA omega-3 fatty acids to enhance focus. DHA omega-3 supplements have not been successful in helping with focus, but EPA has shown to benefit some in studies. Other studies show that taking 15 to 30 milligrams of zinc can also be helpful. I particularly like using a combination of green tea, as it has been shown to boost dopamine, with the herbs rhodiola, ginseng, and ashwagandha. Taken together, we have found that they help boost blood flow in the brain. Medications for low PFC plus ADD symptoms. Psychostimulants, such as a combination of amphetamine salts, Adderall or Vyvanse, or methylphenidate, Ritalin, Concerta, Metadate, etc. I have also used modafinil, Provigil, and armodafinil, Nuvigil, with success, although these tend to be expensive alternatives. Supplements for low PFC plus depressive symptoms, S-adenosyl methionine, SAMe. Medication for low PFC plus depressive symptoms, bupropion, Wellbutrin, if the finding is in isolation or together with increased limbic system perfusion. Supplements for low PFC plus psychosis symptoms, omega-3 fatty acids with antipsychotic medication, not alone. These have been found to have protective effects on young people who are at risk for psychosis. Medication for low PFC plus psychosis symptoms, aripiprazole, Abilify. For a year, I kept a log of what my ADD adult patients told me about the effectiveness of their medication. The following are some of their comments. I experienced an increased awareness of the world around me. I saw the hills for the first time when driving to work. I saw the